Welcome into Riddle and the Reporter on this Friday afternoon, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Junie Riddle, Nick Keyser, Connor Newt behind the glass on the ones and twos. Welcome in. You're tuning in to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. And I got to tell you, after last week's Titans game, there are so many narratives and so many talking points about this team that we will spend the entire first hour of this show just talking Titans because there's so much going into this. And I feel like this happens because September football is weird. Like, a lot of upsets happen. You never really know who's good. The teams that are really good in September, the surprise in September are typically the disappointments in December and January. That's my rule of thumb when it comes to the NFL. And obviously the Titans have a lot more meat left on the bone, especially after you take one of the worst losses that we've seen in the Mike Vrabel era up in Cleveland, Ohio. So, Nick, let's get straight into it. What was your first thoughts after the game with the Titans losing to the Browns 27-3?
Disappointment does not even come close, I feel like, to how I should have felt. I walked away from watching that game, not surprised, but also I thought to myself, yeah, this is what the Titans should have looked like, right? I mean, they are missing so many key pieces. Their offensive line was abysmal, and I mean abysmal. And at the same point in time, none of your weapons show up. But also, I walked away from that matchup thinking to myself that the Browns are pretty legit. I think Deshaun was due for a great game. He had one. I also think that the way that the Titans approached the game just was not enough, Junie. It was not a great game, I think, all around from that standpoint. And so for me, I'm just thinking in terms of, okay, well, if the Titans had a certain approach, maybe with, hey, we're going to run most of the first drive, we're going to pass most of the first drive. I don't think they established themselves in that game.
Oh, no, they didn't establish the run at all. I mean, the running game was terrible.
Awful.
Terrible. Well, Derrick Henry couldn't get anything going. And it wasn't even just the fact that they couldn't get the run game going. It's that they didn't commit to it. Mm-mm. I felt like they were trying to pass the ball too much. And although the Browns' run defense is really good, that's the bread and butter of your offense. You've got to stick to it.
And they didn't.
And when they did run the ball, this is something that I noticed. Handing the ball off to Derrick Henry while you're in the shotgun, I hate that. Especially against a team like this. And then when you did go under center, I think I saw this on three different occasions, and every single one of them was a loss of yards. It's not like they would like sweep it out to the side. It was like Tannehill would take the snap from under center, turn around, and toss it straight back to Henry. So there was no, like, effect of, oh, this could be play action or nothing. No, you just immediately toss it back to him, and immediately the defense knows what you're doing, the linebackers know what you're doing, and they come up and they stuff the run. Like, there was no, like, straight downhill, straight-up handoff, up the middle, no trickery whatsoever, no ground and pound in the first half. It just seemed like they were trying to play cutesy, finesse, football. And it's just not going to work against a team like this with the offensive line that you have.
Right, and I think Myles Garrett, even the way he looked, it felt like someone gave him the damn playbook. It was such a great performance by him. I mean, look, their defense held the Tennessee Titans to 94 yards. 94 yards. I want to know if that's happened to anybody this year under 100 yards. I'm sure maybe that's happened, but that was
even the Broncos, who lost by 50 this past weekend, had more than 94 yards.
Well, now, again, at some point in time, you would have to do something well.
Exactly, because, I mean, the Dolphins just had a track meet all over them. But, I mean, there was just mistakes up and down the field. I mean, the first drive, Arden Key and Jeff Simmons had Deshaun Watson sacked. I mean, they both had their hands around him, and somehow he slips out and hits Elijah Moore on the sideline and gets a first down. Sean Murphy bunting. He makes a great play. I believe it was either the Browns' second or third drive. I can't remember exactly. He forced the fumble, and the Titans get it inside the red zone, I believe, at the Browns' 18-yard line. Every single play was negative yards after that, and they forced a field goal. That was their only points and their only forced turnover in the entire game. The play calling was awful. The execution was awful. The pass block, the run block, all of it was awful. But you want to know what the number one concern for me was? Because I expected that. I expected this to be an ugly, muddied up, ground and pound kind of game, ugly score, maybe all field goals, maybe only one touchdown the entire. I mean, it was going to be that kind of game. But what was the most disappointing for me was the pass rush not getting home. I mean, we just saw it. Like, the Titans got an extra day. The Browns had just played the Steelers on the road. AFC North football, always, you know, black and blue. You're going to be after that game, all bruised up. And what did the Steelers do to win that game? They rushed Deshaun Watson, forced him into mistakes, and they created four turnovers. You didn't do that in this game. Outside of that Sean Murphy bunting stripping Elijah Moore, there was none of that in this game. The pass rush didn't get home. The run defense was there. But speaking of Sean Murphy bunting and Christian Fulton, they were either missing their assignments, letting receivers wide open, or they were holding or getting blatant pass interference calls that extended the drives, two of which were on big third downs. Another one was when Deshaun Watson was getting sacked, tried to throw the ball directly behind him, which was the most idiotic play he could have done. And the Browns are sitting there at 2nd and 26. And not only did Christian Fulton get a pass interference on the play, but even if you did think that was tic-tac, which, I mean, you could make the argument, but again, I still think it was a decent call. Could have went either way. But Arden Key got a roughing the passer call on the same play. And it's like, this is how you're supposed to win games, is with your defense. And they were just all over the place. Look, it was frustrating to watch.
But when everything doesn't go right for them on offense, it automatically goes back to the defense has to do something. And look, and I just want to point this out because the numbers, Junie has laid this out perfectly. Like we already said, 94 total yards for the two-tone blue. You look down at some of the other ones, too, that are just eye-popping. It's been a week, but let's go ahead and throw these out there. Titans had 6 first downs. They were 2 of 12 on third down. They were actually 1 of 1 on fourth down, and so were the Browns. That was interesting.
And you know what that one fourth down was, though, right?
Mm.
That was that insane Chris Moore catch.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about the most spectacular play of the day for your team was the way you converted and got lucky and extended that drive on fourth down.
Surprisingly, it was him. Surprisingly, it was him that was able to catch that ball. And so... And also, too, I don't even care about the time of possession really in this game. Yes, that's a huge factor just in terms of looking at, okay, they've got the ball for this long. But look, I think what you said alluded to this perfectly was the Titans just didn't capitalize whatsoever. And so when you can't even make a good opportunity turn into points, I don't know what else to tell you. It was awful. It was shameful of them to come out of Cleveland with a field goal. But hey, the only plus out of that, jokingly I must say, Nick Folk is still perfect.
Yeah.
So
Nick Folk is still perfect. But, I mean it's just baffling to me to watch a performance like that. Because again, they just lost their heart and soul of their offense, Nick Chubb.
Sure.
And you had seen what Deshaun Watson has been since he came back from that year off he took with the Texans. Last year he had the 12-game suspension. This was his 9th game as a Cleveland Brown. And he, by far, by a landslide, had his best game. A 123.4 QB rating. Off the charts. Off the charts. He only had 5 incomplete passes. Or, I'm sorry, 6. 6 incomplete passes, 289, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks. I mean, he played absolutely outstanding. And on top of that, I guess one of the plays that really got to me was when you have 12 seconds left and you're right there. You can make it a one possession game going into halftime. You have no timeouts, and obviously, yes, you have time to take a shot in the end zone. But why not take the three right there, right at the end of the half?
Great
question. Make it 13-6. You get the ball back. You're going in. You had a good drive.
You're somewhat hopeful.
Yeah, that can give you just, I mean, maybe not all the momentum in the world, but it gives you something going into halftime. And then you saw what happened. Andre Diller just gets absolutely destroyed by Myles Garrett. No assistance on the side. No tight end. No running back to chip block. Nothing. Just him, one-on-one, and he got to Tannehill in a heartbeat.
Well, and Junie, I think one plus we can take out of all of this going into this next matchup against the Bengals, although it does not affect the game on Sunday, I think the best news that we got was the fact that Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, his suspension is now 4 games.
Yes, and that
so
is
that
some good
means
news.
That next week he will be able to come back, go to practice, report just like he had. And I believe Vrabel said that today, and he's been doing this since the season started. He was with the team. He was with the strength staff. He was still, you know, ready for game action, but he couldn't participate in actual practice in front of the public or just out in front of the reporters or anything like that. But it's good to see that. The other downside that I know that we will talk about later, I want to throw this out there. Jim Wyatt said originally that Treylon Burks is ruled out. First one on there that said that, from what I saw, at least. I'm sure maybe Schefter had it or Pelissero, whoever. Treylon Burks is out this week. Not a great thing, especially after putting up 3 points and 90-something yards of offense. Like, whoo, you need something, and Treylon Burks is not going to be part of it, although he hasn't shown up yet. I think that knee is going to continue to bother him throughout the entire season. So it's not looking too pretty for him. But at least they're getting some more protection on the line, although he's not great. I don't think he's a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's going to give you something else that someone like a Dillard, you know, Dillard's been consistent, but I think PT is going to do just fine.
615-737-1025. We are taking your phone and text on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Your reaction to the Titans this week, all the narratives, your opinions, we want to weigh in on that. But coming up next, I got a lot of flack from people on the phone line about my opinions of the Titans going into the season. I want to go into some of my concerns that I had going into the season over the summer and how that's impacting the team now. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
It seems like there's some reluctance there or inability to do things horizontally, and particularly it seems, I thought, you know, their best options there before Phillips would be Spears and would be Chig, and they haven't been able to get anything going with that, which is the one place a quick pass game seems like there should be some answers there.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at last week, a lot of it was just because they had to have a tight end attached to the tackle to be able to breathe just a little bit before the quarterback gets hit. We all know 2.27 seconds on the one before halftime, so that didn't really work. So I think really, you know, you got to go more empty. One thing that they should do, because, you know, this is a copycat league, right? You saw the Rams on Monday Night Football, and they copied off of what the Dolphins have been doing, where they're putting the receiver in motion, right, jet motion, and it's just releasing them right into the route.
That short motion.
Head start. Yeah. You let them get a head start, and then you could just throw the ball to them real quick. I think that's something that they need to incorporate using Spears. Like, put them in that motion out of the backfield. Just do different things. You got to do something to shock the defenses, because it seems like they're always in position to stop whatever it is that's coming at them.
That was TD talking about some things the Titans can use to implement in order to get some guys open and get them going. I like that. Well, you see with the Dolphins all the time, they're using the motion, they're using the guy's speed, giving them a head start. It's almost like Canadian football, how they can kind of get a head start behind the line of scrimmage, and then they just take off. So, I don't know. They got to do something. 94 yards of offense. I know the Browns' defense has looked really good. I mean, statistically-wise, they're the number one defense in the league. Week one, they only let up 3 points to the Bengals. They only let up 3 points against you. And I believe they only let up 12 points on offense to the Steelers. 14 of the points that they scored in that game were from the defense. So, you're talking about a team that has only let up, I'm trying to do quick math here, it shouldn't be that hard, but 18 points.
Yeah.
The entire first season. 3 weeks of the season. Yeah. So, you know, they got to get it going. They got to, because they played the Saints, who's a good defense. They played the Chargers, who is not a good defense at home. And then they played the Browns, who is another good defense. And we've just seen the struggles that they've had. So I wanted to go in to some of my takes that I had over the summer. And you were with me for a majority of it.
Yes.
And I got called a lot of things. I got called a Titans hater. I got said that you're way too down on this team. You're underestimating this team. And for me, I was a little bit insulted by that. Because back in 2021, I had them as the number one seed in my preseason preview. I thought the Titans were going to have a great year. I even had them in the AFC Championship game in 2021 because I thought they were going to be that good. Last year, in 22, I had them going 9-8, and the number one concern that I had going into the season was their offensive line. And guess what happened? That was their biggest concern. And I think, you know, they had a lot more injuries than I had expected, and they went 7-10 because of that. But still in the same area code. This year, I had a bunch of concerns. And based off the way the team finished last year, the offensive line was my number one because they went cheap and got backups. And guess what everybody's talking about now, Nick? About how awful this offensive line is and how they went out and got backups.
So, yes, they did. But also, too, you know what, though? I think Daniel Brunskill has actually lived up in a little, and I think he's kind of exceeded maybe what fans thought he would be like here in the first few weeks. And you can disagree with me, but I think based on what he's walked himself into and who they don't have. And look, you can't guess that Peter Skoronski is going to need to go into surgery to take out his busted appendix. All right.
That is fair.
That is fair. That is very fair. You can never predict things like that. And you can't predict a healthy offensive line. And so for me, the start to the season, it's been dependent on that. It was a great prediction because I think it's a good thing to fall back on. You know what I mean? I think it's easy for us to go to and just say, yes, the line, it has to improve. They went and got backups. Well, then you turn around and you hear from Vrabel, and it's, you know, these guys can play a role that I need them to play. And so he has faith in them. And I think that they're slowly starting to come into that, and that's great. And I want to see them continue to build on that because they can. They really can. I'm excited for that. And the reason being is I think we'll see it to not today. I'm about to say that the game is later today. It's on Sunday. But when they are on the field and they're going to feed Derrick Henry the ball, or if it's even with Tajay Spears, I think we'll see some more carries this week. I think they want to ground and pound and kind of go against some of the Bengals linemen and go toe-to-toe because they didn't do very well against them last time out, especially in the playoff game that they know having their nightmares, apparently. So, look, this is a big game for Tannehill. It's a big game for the offensive line. The defense needs to get their ass in gear because that's exactly what they didn't do last week. So, I think there's a lot to look at, Junie. Your preseason predictions, I think, have been spot on so far. But now, I wonder what they look like moving forward.
That is a big question. And my number one to the offensive line, because that was my number one concern.
Yes.
I had a bunch. But the whole Nicholas Petit-Ferrer suspension getting knocked down to just 4 games, so he will be back at practice.
It's huge.
Likely on Monday. I think that is huge. And for me, I think Hubbard, although he's not great, mm-hmm. and he didn't look that good in Cleveland, but I felt like he looked pretty good against the Saints and Chargers. I think that they should kind of keep him there on the right side because he is a solidified right tackle.
Absolutely.
The thing that I've been hearing other people on the station talk about, I heard it on Robbie and Rexroth, I heard Jared talking about it, is giving Nicholas Petit-Ferrer an opportunity at left tackle
and taking out Andre Dillard. I think that's exactly where he'll go.
I think so too. And I think, I mean, how many sacks has Andre Dillard let up this year already? I mean, he had three let up this past weekend against the Browns. I know for a fact he had one or two against the Chargers. So, I mean, I think he has six sacks so far let up on the season, I believe. So, how many times did we talk about Dennis Daly last year? He only let up 12 sacks the entire year, which is a ton.
Yeah.
But in three games, Andre Dillard is already halfway there.
Yeah, that's not a stat you want to be part of, Junie.
So I definitely think Nicholas Petit-Ferrer has got to be inserted in at left. I think he's got to get an opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, base it off how Dillard responds, because you got to give the guy an opportunity to respond. But I don't see it. I don't see it with this guy. Again, he was a first-round draft bust with Philadelphia, a fourth-round pick who wound up being really good. I should say that. But he got beat out, and he can't play. He can't play. And when you're going up against Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard, that's another good edge-rushing duo that the Bengals have, not even to mention DJ Reader, who's also a really good defensive lineman. So they're going to have a tall task going this weekend, especially in the passing game. I don't know how well the Bengals are in the run game, but I know in the passing game, they were all over Stafford on Monday Night Football.
Well, Joe Mixon had a great game last week.
Well, that's their offense. I'm talking about their run defense.
That's yes. So I'm wondering the same thing for myself. I was thinking Joe Mixon because you said run, but I think it's fair to say that their run defense, I think it will look a little better, because think about it. They have Orlando Brown now.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what angle they go at it when they start the game. But that's going to be a huge telltale sign of where they want to go. And I hope it's to the right. If you ask me, I feel like Derek has played better going that way. But then again, we'll have to see and find out. But then again, with the Bengals line, I think you just kind of have to take a good read, honestly. I think we're going to see a lot of changes and a lot of different calls back there, and I think that we'll see more of Tajay getting the first down reps in this game.
So a few other things I had going this offseason that were some concerns of mine. Everybody thought Harold Landry was going to come back and be Harold Landry from 2021.
Mm.
He is clearly not.
No.
I mean, he is clearly not fully healthy, and that's not his fault. You know, he's just coming off an ACL surgery. When you're an edge rusher in this defensive scheme, you're putting a lot of pressure on your knees to twist and contort.
Yes.
So that's one. Azeez Al-Shaair, a guy that I thought that I was wrong about seeing him in training camp. I mean, he's been a little bit of a liability. I mean, some of the penalties, the late hits that he's had, and then he got burned by the Cleveland Browns starting running back, Jerome Ford.
Mm.
He did a little sluggo route, fake slant, went to the end zone. Azeez just completely bit on the slant and let up a wide-open touchdown there. Having some concerns about that, but I would have to say my second biggest concern that I had this offseason, and again, this was before DeAndre Hopkins, and this is why I was much more positive about this offense when they did get them, was because they were going to have to rely so heavily on year two weapons. Treylon Burke, Chigga Conquo, Kyle Phillips. And look what those guys have been, right? Chig has been barely a factor in this offense whatsoever. Even when he has gotten targeted, he's had a lot of drops. Same with Treylon Burks. Way too many drops. He's had the one play in the Chargers game, the 70-yard bomb. But outside of that, he's been non-existent. You're a first-round pick. This is your second year. You came into training camp ready to go, in shape, unlike you did your rookie year.
Right.
And you were supposed to ball out, and he has not balled out. He will not be playing this weekend now. So, again, injuries are a concern with him. Kyle Phillips, who was banged up all last year, guess what? He's been hurt again. So, the second year guys, some of the additions they made on defense, Harold Landry coming back, not being Harold Landry. These were all concerns that we are now seeing play into fruition for the Tennessee Titans. So a lot to be unseen. And again, this is September football. But at the same time, are these problems fixable?
That's a great question. And I think one of the biggest problems that I have is, especially through 3 weeks, the Titans are the third worst team with receiving yards, Junie. That sucks. That is blatant. That sucks. They have 548 receiving yards, and I believe they have one receiving touchdown. One.
And that would be to Nick Westbrook.
They have one. And I believe they're the only NFL team that has one. Yes, they are. They're the only team that does.
And they had to get better in that area. They were one of the worst statistical passing teams last year.
Yeah. I would arguably say if they can't get some damn touchdowns on Sunday, and I know that we're going to get into this next, do we need to think more about who is throwing the ball at some point?
Yes. So this week there have been a ton of rumors, a ton of criticism for two key members of the Titans. We are going to get into that next, dive into those narratives and what has been said around Nashville about these two individuals. But before we go, tune in to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game this Saturday at 8 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Alabama versus Mississippi State, presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for all the scenic views of all the hottest college football games across the country and home of the 29-degree beer. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Then this rumor came out. Ryan Tannehill, Titans quarterback to the Jets. Now, that's interesting. Here's why. I didn't buy Kirk Cousins. Why? Because he shrinks, and New York is a pressure cooker. That's not what Kirk Cousins is. Kirk Cousins is 1 o'clock window Kirk. All right? That's what he is. It's been established. Don't argue. Right? Like, we all know he's 1 o'clock window. It's not a late game. He's not window. He's not pressure. New York City is pressure. Plus, it's a bad O-line, a bad pass-blocking O-line. Kirk Cousins isn't hyper-athletic. Bad O-line, Kirk Cousins pressure, give me a break. And go back to Tannehill when Tennessee was the number one seed. J-Mac's going to hate this. What was Tennessee? Defensive head coach. Great defense. One-star receiver. A strong run game. And a shaky pass-blocking offensive line. They could run block. They didn't pass block well. What are the Jets? Defensive coach, great defense, run game. Can run block okay, bad pass blocking O-line, one-star receiver. It's the same team.
That was Colin Cowherd yesterday on The Herd talking about Ryan Tannehill potentially going to the Jets. Now, to preface this, is this a true rumor? Absolutely not. This is all speculation. Even the whole Kirk Cousins aspect, I know they went 0-3, but even there are no real reports of anybody like that, like a starting quarterback currently
that's
on their own team
being
on the trade block. And again, that's how it could start.
Good.
But would it make sense?
Great question.
I would say yes. I would say 1,000% yes.
Would you take a 1-for-1?
What 1-for-1? Who, like, who and who?
Tannehill and Cousins. Would you trade for Nick Cousins? One up.
Kirk Cousins, you mean?
Kirk Cousins.
You're thinking hockey. I know you, Mr. Reporter over here, thinking about the Preds.
I would trade for him, but
no. But would I take on this team? No, no, I wouldn't. Because I mean,
they're essentially the same.
I would say they're completely different.
That's what Colin's saying, though.
No. I mean, they're the same, like, type of court. They're in the same tier,
but
right?
I see it as the same value. You know what I mean? If you're thinking of what Colin is doing here,
Ryan Tannehill fits this offense. Kirk Cousins does not. When it comes to the Jets, straight up, Tannehill would be a better fit.
You know how much drama there would be if Zach Wilson was part of that trade and came back
and came
to
here?
Nashville?
Oh my! You're talking about Zach Wilson, Malik
oh
Willis,
my gosh.
And Will Levis. All in, I mean, that would be terrible. But no, let's stick to this though. I mean, does that make sense? Does it make sense for the Titans? All offseason, I was saying I think it's in the Titans' best interest to move off of Ryan Tannehill, and this was my reasoning why. It's not because Ryan Tannehill is super bad. And to be honest with you, and to be frank, where the Titans are right now, outside of the Saints game, really isn't Ryan Tannehill's fault. I'm not putting the blame on Tannehill.
Not completely.
And I'm not saying that Tannehill's bad, but it's the state of the team.
Yes.
Listen, Tannehill's not going to get you over the top. Tannehill's going to get you enough wins, like we saw in the Charger game. He's going to have three or four of those games in a season, right? But this team is still going to be a 7-8-9-win team at the best, right? There's no fixing this offensive line. Will they gradually get a little bit better throughout the season? Yes, but all offensive lines do.
Yep.
And they're still, by far, in my opinion, a bottom three offensive line in the NFL. And it's just with the lack of help on this offense, with the lack of a true running game, with the lack of your receivers that are supposed to set up, Chigakonko, Treylon Burks stepping up, I just don't see this team going anywhere. Even if they do get on a little bit of a hot streak, and let's say somehow miraculously they win the division, or somehow miraculously they become a wild card team, do you see this team beating anybody in the playoffs?
Oh, that's a struggle. That thought alone is alarming, because it comes into the fact of the mediocrity that kind of surrounds the Titans, but also the city in general, if you ask me. Then when you think of just the Titans specifically, if they don't make the postseason, or even if they do, it goes down to, oh, are they even ready for a playoff game? And by the standards that we have set based on our first segment, hell no. Like, no way. And especially what they need. And don't forget, too, I don't think D-Hop has lived up to what we have signed him to be here in town, personally. $12 million for a guy that's done absolutely really nothing. He's had a few big explosive plays. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. We've been promising through talking and saying, hey, he's going to be great for the two-tone blue. He's going to be great for the Titans. We were blowing him up all offseason long. Well, guess what? He's been nowhere to be seen, really. He's had a few good explosive plays, I would say.
But do you really think it's his fault? I don't think it's his fault. I think he's getting open. I think he's making the most of his targets when they are on target.
Sure,
but there's no time to pass the ball downfield.
That's true.
There's no time to get him involved.
However, I don't know. I feel like sometimes he's just caught on a weird route. Like, I don't know. Like, hear me out. I think when they were playing the Browns, they absolutely got boat raced in the trenches. We know that.
Yeah.
Now, I think they need to get the ball off quicker. How they do that, I don't know if it needs to be a screen. I don't know if it needs to be a drop route. I don't know if it needs to be like in and out. I have no idea. But we need to see more productivity from them, because I already talked about it last segment. They are with one touchdown in this receiving core. One. If you can't change that, if you can't get a few this weekend, gosh, if you don't have five by week five, where you're averaging one a week, dude, you need to change the quarterback.
It's getting bad, and I just think that it is really not Ryan Tannehill's fault. And this is why I wanted them to move off Tannehill, was because they went cheap on the offensive line.
Yep.
They went out and got backup, you know, Brunskill from San Francisco, backup Andre Dillard from Philadelphia, thinking that they could turn these guys into starters, and just flat out they're not. And again, you said Brunskill's playing all right. I mean, I'm not saying he's playing bad, but I mean, he's not playing great.
No.
He's not being a difference maker.
It's busted goods for busted goods.
Aaron Brewer, who I thought looked good in the preseason and who looked good at training camp, he has not looked that great either. So this offensive line is really bad. The Titans could have allocated some money if they were to move off Ryan Tannehill to beef up this offensive line. Could have just relied on the running game and Derrick Henry, whether it was Malik Willis or Will Levis, whoever won the job if they had moved off Ryan Tannehill. I felt like that would have set this team up in a better situation, because look at the other teams in your division. And I brought this up as well, and everybody was like, oh, that doesn't matter, blah, 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 blah. Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud, they're not on good teams. They're not going to make the playoffs. And guess what? They're getting experience. And to be honest with you, both of them are looking a little bit better than what I had thought they were.
Really good.
And on top of that, because their teams are bad, they're going to pick high in the draft. And guess what they're going to draft?
Get more weapons.
Assets to help them improve.
Yep.
If the Titans are still with Ryan Tannehill, your young quarterbacks are getting no experience, no area to improve, and you're going to be middle of the pack to where you're not going to get one of those ultra-high draft picks to go out and get a difference maker on this team. When you're picking in the top 10, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a difference maker.
Well, you should at least.
Like, look at Burrow and the Bengals.
Right.
Right? They had Burrow's year, he tore his ACL toward the end of the year. It didn't really matter that he tore his ACL. The Bengals were god-awful that year. Guess what they did? They had the number 5 overall pick, and they go and get his guy, Ja'Marr Chase. Next year, they're in the Super Bowl. That's how this stuff happens.
Right.
And when you stick with Ryan Tannehill with this god-awful, makeshift, cheap, you know, goodwill offensive line, this is what you're going to get. This is what you're going to get. Mediocrity.
Right. Busted goods for busted goods. I think that's exactly what they did this offseason to this point is they have shown time and time again, and I get it. It's a new regime. It's a new face in charge that's making these signings. I get it. Rand Carthon, you have inherited a team that did not exceed expectations at all last season, and you also saw a team that had a offensive I don't even know if I want to say that. Offensive coordinator that was someone that couldn't even be a competent play caller.
No.
If you don't even have that, you're in deep doo-doo. And I think that Tim Kelly, quite frankly, you know what? I know that Vrabel might feel his little hot seat. You know, I think the seat warmers are turned on at the lowest setting right now for Mike Vrabel.
Do too.
But I think for Tim Kelly, I think he feels a lot more pressure than people think as well.
I think, and you know, that's been a conversation as well around town is about Mike Vrabel and is his seat heating up. I mean, I think it's on watch.
Yeah.
I think the finger is lingering around pressing the button.
I think so.
To turn the seat warmer on. If they have a bad year this year, is he going to get fired? No, I don't think so. But if they do have a bad year going into next year, is he going to be on the hot seat? 1,000%.
And I think Vrabel has accomplished a lot. Don't get me wrong whatsoever. He has turned this franchise around all the way from the studs up until what it is now. I think he's done a fantastic job. But now it's about the pieces.
It's about what have you done for me lately.
And they get another guard in the draft.
Either way. I don't think Vrabel should be fired no matter what really happens this year.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if it's a bad year, and they have stuck to the main core that they decided to keep with Henry, with Byard, with Tannehill, then going into next year,
right?
Yeah, the seat's going to be warm, and they're going to want a winner. I mean, this team was in contention for multiple years the past couple years, and since last year with the 7-game losing streak going into this year, unless there is a turnaround this season, he will be going into
They're 1-9 in their last 10.
Year. It's baffling to think about
yeah.
for where this franchise was just a year ago. Just a year ago when they started the year in 2022 7-3, would you have ever guessed that we have gotten to this point?
No shot.
It has been rough. But either way, again, to preface, the sky is falling right now. The house is burning, but it is September. There is time to turn it around. But for me, it's just hard to see that turnaround when I don't see a way that this offensive line significantly improves. And when you're playing in a deep AFC like this and they're in the edge rusher position, I feel like every team has a legitimate edge rusher. And when you're both of your tackles are getting exposed on a weekly basis, it's just tough for me to see this offense put up points with the other offenses that we are seeing around the AFC. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line. Give us your opinion on the Titans and if they can turn it around. Coming up next, we are going to preview their matchup at Nissan Stadium this weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals. We are going to give you the keys to victory and what the Titans need to accomplish to get back on track after that tough loss in Cleveland. You're listening to Riddle and Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Kuser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
What's going on? Good morning.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Paul, the offense for the Bengals, do you feel like they started to figure some things out in the second half on Monday night against the Rams? Where do you think they are right now offensively?
Figuring things out would be the key phrase. They, you know, this is a group that came in with as much continuity and kind of star power as anybody in football with these three receivers and Burrow and an offensive line that they think is the best that he's had since he's been here. But it's almost as if they've had to redo the way they operate offensively because of Joe Burrow's calf injury. You know, I mean, that he once he tweaked it in week two, they'd already kind of been working in a limited way. I mean, he was not under center. They're not able to roll him out much. You're not seeing all that off script kind of creative magic that's been a Burrow signature. And so everything is in the pocket. And it's him, and he can do that, obviously. It's one of his strengths, but they're not fully operational yet. So they're figuring things out, yes. You're seeing some semblances of it, but they're just going to be limited for a little while as he tries to gradually get himself all the way back to full health. We don't know how much farther he'll be back this weekend. He hopes, and they hope certainly, better than he was on Monday, where he was really gritting through it. But that's really where their limitations are that makes them different. And they are still kind of figuring it out as they go, what they can and can't do.
That was Paul Dinner Jr. from The Athletic. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals, talking about the Bengals offense and how Burrow is limited with his calf injury. And if there was any kind of break that the Titans could get after a tough loss to what I should say a top three defense in the Cleveland Browns. Listen, we are wrecking the Titans right now. But again, they just played one of the best defenses. Yardage-wise, they are the best defense. Scoring-wise, I think they are as well. So again, we're being really hard on this team right now because we expect a little bit more offensively from them from the 94 yards. Against a Browns team like this, but they're getting a break against the Bengals, I feel. The Bengals have not been playing like the Bengals that we've seen the last 2 years since Burrow got out of his rookie year, and they've been a perennial Super Bowl contender. Back-to-back AFC championships, they haven't been playing like that. Burrow dealing with the calf injury, he's clearly not 100%, and it has been affecting him. Not as accurate as he's normally been, not throwing downfield likely normally has, and his escapability from the pocket. He's not a mobile guy, but he moves around in the pocket a bunch. And so this could be the break the Titans need, playing the Bengals when they're at their lowest point here in the beginning of the season. So when you look at this matchup on paper, Nick, what's the first thing that you look at that the Titans need to do in order to get a win?
Well, obviously, I was just talking about how they need to get more touchdowns receiving. I'd like to see that when they start the game. And if they can get going in the air, that would be fabulous. Because if they can do that, I feel like they could establish themselves a little bit better. Now, I want to read a text from Robert because I think he's thinking a little bit how I do. Now, he doesn't talk about this matchup, but he's talking about the thought that I'm having along with this question that you posed to me. Robert says, there's definitely time for the Titans to turn it around. We haven't even played a conference game yet. As long as we get it straight before we go out against Indy and Jacksonville, I guess even Houston, they need to just let the stars do what the stars do. And so, look, for me, you need to put your biggest playmakers in the areas of success. Look, I think it's easy for the Bengals to anticipate what you're going to do. The key thing for me to watching the Titans on Sunday, Junie, is how unpredictable could the Titans be in terms of maybe their scheme, their play calling? Could they even do a little bit of a different setup in the backfield at times? Could they throw them off with, hey, maybe we give Derek some more runs here? Because, look, Tajay, I think, is a pivotal part to this game. Here's why. He's shifty. He can find those gaps. I think Derek has struggled at times this season, if not maybe most of the time, to find the gaps and be shifty himself. I'd like to see them use Tajay for that and let Derek, once this game gets going a little bit, to get him going the next.
But I feel like Derrick Henry needs those early carries to get going because he's one of those that in the beginning of the game, he's going to get 1 yard, maybe 2 yards, 3-yarder here, another 2-yarder, and that then he breaks one for 20.
But that has not helped at all through the first few games. They've tried that. They have tried that, Junie. That is my only caveat to this, and I think it's easy for the Bengals to anticipate that. So I don't know. I think it's good to see that they have that weapon in Tajay, but I think if they want to get the run game started, I think you have to start it somewhat with more explosive plays, at least, that are designed for that with Tajay. Derek will have his moments. I think he needs to eat this Sunday. I really think he does, but
I'm gonna surprise you with my answer for one of the keys to victory.
Shock me.
Clearly, number one, the pass rush has to get to Joe Burrow. They did not get to Deshaun Watson. They did not capitalize on getting him on the ground when they had those opportunities. I counted 4 or 5 missed sacks in that game that could have been, you know, game changers, you know, stalling some of those drives. But that's clear. Everyone knows that. The thing that I'm looking at for this game, it's going to be hard. Because, again, we already talked about Sam Hubbard, Trey Hendrickson, DJ Reader. They got a good front there for Cincinnati. But their secondary is awful. They got 3 new guys back there. Awuzie is their only member of their secondary that is returning. They lost both of their safeties. Jesse Bates left in free agency to Atlanta. Von Bell left. I believe he went to Carolina.
Yes.
And then they also lost Eli Apple. Again, not a big loss. But that's a new guy that's in there, Cam Taylor-Britt. They got Mike Hilton in the slot, but I feel like Mike Hilton is better at run support. He's a really good blitzing nickel, which Ryan Tannehill alluded to in his press conference, but he's not necessarily the best corner at defending the pass. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, you know, Treylon Burks has been struggling. He's going to be out in this game. But guys like Chris Moore and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, when they've gotten their opportunities, they've answered the bell. So I think that if they kind of get going, I think this is a good matchup between the Titans receivers and the Bengals secondary, that this could be a game, if the offensive line holds up, to where the Titans can get their passing game going, kind of like they did against the Los Angeles Chargers. So the one guy that is an X factor for me that really needs to get going is Chigakonkwo.
Yes.
I mean, this was supposed to be the breakout tight end in all of the NFL.
Yeah, talk about missing piece.
Yes. He needs to get going. He has 7 receptions for 42 yards in 3 games. That's unacceptable. You know, he's not in there to block. You know, tight ends are, you're either in there to block and hold up in the run and pass game, or you're a receiving threat. He is a clear receiving threat. And last year, he had a great rookie year for the limited amount of snaps. I believe he only was in there for 31% of the offensive snaps, and he had over 400 yards. He was up there with the leading receivers, and they barely even used him last year. This is a guy that they need to get going, and this is the perfect game for them to do it. I don't trust this Cincinnati Bengals secondary to have the advantage over the Titans' weapons. And if the offensive line can hold up, I believe that is the key. Get Derrick Henry going. Keep feeding him the ball, just like you did in the Chargers game. If you can run the ball, use the play action, put Tannehill in his more preferred situations, and expose this secondary of the Cincinnati Bengals. That is where I am at with that.
Well, I think that's fair, and I'm looking at some of the rankings for where Chig would be, and oh, dude, it does not look good. How many yards did you say? 40?
I believe 42 is when I last checked it, but I can double. I think it's 7 receptions for 42 yards.
Oh my god!
Let me double check. Yes, that is exactly it.
Wow.
Yep, yards per reception 6. It's not good.
See, that's hard to believe because he's even a guy that's underperformed as well. I mean, Evan Engram has underperformed this year. Logan Thomas obviously has. I think he's a kind of a weapon that Washington has needed this year, too. And also, too, look, I think Luke Musgrave is a tight end I would rather have right now, too. But my gosh, we've got to see a step up here.
He's got to step up. This team has to step up because the difference between going 2-2 and 1-3 is huge. And getting the Bengals right now where they are – This could be a pivotal game at home that the Titans could sneak out a win, because if they don't, they are already behind in the AFC South standings. This would put them even further behind in those standings, because there have been some surprise teams in the AFC South, and we are going to kind of get into that narrative as well. Where do the Titans rank in the AFC South through the first 3 weeks of the season? We are going to get into that next, but before we go, tune in to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game tomorrow for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will kick off at 3 p.m. at home against Missouri, with pregame beginning at 1:30. You can hear all the coverage on the 102.5 The Game app and thegamenashville.com. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.